Hang out with ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 this Thursday at Madison's in Beaumont. The Killer Bees and the Wheelhouse will be broadcasting live from noon until 7, so join us for some roadshow fun this Thursday at Madison's in Beaumont.
In 2007, Marine First Lieutenant Travis Mannion was killed in Iraq after saving his wounded teammates. Travis's legacy lives on through the words he spoke before his final deployment. If not me, then who? Words that today fuel the spirit of Travis Mannion Foundation. And through TMF, these words can live in you too. Show the world what you're made of, because character is invisible until it's not. Find out how you can strengthen the character of your community alongside empowered veterans, families of the fallen, and inspired civilians at TravisMannion.org.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
No, you can't say that. Killer Bees broadcasting live. Madison's in Beaumont. Swing on by. Happy hour just getting underway. Business about to pick up. All right, let's start Bad Take Boulevard with Brendan. Brendan Riley has made the list. Brendan Riley is on Bad Take Boulevard. Brendan Riley at 2:46 on Sunday said on Twitter, "I cannot believe the Texans are going to beat the Cowboys on the road. The NFC is so bad."
Can I give some context?
How did that turn out?
Can I give some context?
Yeah, but final score context.
This is when they got the interception and had the ball at the 4-yard line, and they were winning already with like 3.5 minutes left. The fact that they didn't come out and win that game is actually impressive. Like, I mean that. It is sincerely impressive.
So, what was the final in that game? Who won?
I don't know, Jeremy. Who won? You tell me.
The Cowboys won that football game. We're firmly in Cowboy country right now in Beaumont, and they're telling us the Cowboys beat the Texans.
In that moment, did you not also think it was over? Like, I thought for sure the Texans were winning that game at that point.
I never say for sure. I was unbelievably surprised, shocked, and interested that they were actually going to close out the deal. But part of me also thought there is a way that they could screw this up, and they did.
Yeah. All right, next Bad Take Boulevard, Brendan, saying that Breaking Bad is overrated. We had people texting in the other day. B-Mac just gave a deep sigh.
B-Mac, I don't know if he had indigestion or gas, but that didn't sound well.
Yeah, Brendan the other day on our radio program, the fine radio program that we try to do each and every day, just said that Breaking Bad, he didn't just say it, he said it the other day, Breaking Bad is overrated. You don't even like TV and you're a fan of Breaking Bad.
No, I've never seen it. I've heard it's fantastic. I know that everybody raves about it, but I'm not going to sit there and tell you that it's overrated.
Yeah, all right. So that one was Brendan landing on Breaking Bad. And then one of the other ones from Brendan landing on Bad Take Boulevard.
Oh my gosh.
Said Walter White was a bad TV character.
Is this just a Brendan segment today?
Only the first three. Well,
kind of like when you intentionally try to screw us on Who Said It.
I actually want to blow one out there if I can.
Yeah, you can.
Because I said this yesterday, and as I said it, I was like, I have a feeling that Jeremy isn't going to like this. But I truly believe it.
For something that you said?
Yes. Okay. I said that authentic tacos are not as good as, I don't know, Americanized tacos.
Oh my goodness.
Sour cream is the best taco topping. Period.
Oh, that's false.
Hold on a second. Was that two different takes?
It sounds like it.
I mean,
that was two different takes.
Yeah, it actually is, because one, you're influencing people by saying what the best topping is, and you started with what the best taco is.
I guess technically it's two different takes, but the second take is the reason for my first take.
My wife would agree with the sour cream.
Sour cream is
really
so good
for
tacos,
white.
But that's not authentic.
Okay. You can say that.
she doesn't know. Here's a little bit of background with Branham and why I think this take is outrageous. I grew up where my abuelita every single morning would make homemade tortillas and make homemade breakfast tacos from scratch. Whether it was eggs, potatoes, whether it was eggs and beans, you name it. She would make homemade breakfast tacos from scratch every single day. So there is no way in the world, especially in the state of Texas, in the city of Houston, where you can get away saying that inauthentic tacos are better than authentic tacos.
I think that's a Midwest take, because you're more addicted to and attracted to sour cream, a dairy product, than you are the true ingredients of tacos.
It's my Hungarian roots.
Or your hungry roots.
No,
but
really,
either
though.
Way.
It's a super big Hungarian staple. I'm serious.
Alex just said that Brendan loves Taco Bell. Is that true, Brendan? Do you like Taco
okay,
Bell?
Okay, so Taco Bell, yes. Taco Bell tacos, not real.
What do you get at Taco Bell? They like the nachos?
I mean, like,
Supreme?
Anything else? Any of their burritos? Any of their, like, I love a lot of the specialty items they do. I mean, yeah, the tacos okay. are fine.
I mean,
I just, there's
those
like
are kind of tacos.
10 other places I'd rather get tacos.
I've got a couple. I saw one the other night that really bothered me, and I forgot to bring it up on the show.
Yeah.
But Texas fans lost their mind because Rice took them to overtime. And we're refusing to factor in that college kids who are very impressionable and still maturing and growing up had to deal with their head coach and everything that was going on, and realizing that there was a lot of distractions that weren't associated with basketball that go with that, and maybe to take it down a notch for at least a week or so that these kids have a chance to kind of digest everything that's going on their plate right now.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I thought I was surprised that game went to overtime.
It shouldn't have.
Scott Pera does a pretty good job at Rice.
Who's yeah.
James Harden's high school coach. Yeah. I like what he's doing there at Rice. I did not expect them to be competitive with Texas that
night. I didn't either, but I totally understand why, yeah. if in fact that was a factor. Because no kid that's going to college and parents that are, you know, basically sending their kid to be looked after by, you know, a head coach and a coaching staff that suddenly has him taken away and him dealing with what he did, I don't think that it's fair to say, well, they should have blown their doors off by 25 or 30. Their emotions play into it, too.
2370 about Brendan's take. Just about the whitest thing I heard today. Brendan,
not gonna deny that.
Brendan took our top five spots of Bad Take Boulevard. Let's go to Ocho on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Did you hear what Micah Parsons said about Jalen Hurts?
Yep.
Basically saying he's a product of the Philadelphia Eagles system.
Okay. You know my feeling on Jalen Hurts as it relates to the playoffs, and I'm not changing it for any Eagle fan or otherwise that comes at me at Twitter, that I want Jalen Hurts to perform in the playoffs like he's performed all season long, and then I'll give him his props and say I was wrong about him not being able to take a really good football team further along in the playoffs, because I believe he was a big part of why they lost last year to Tampa. But I will say that he is the MVP of the NFL to this point in the season,
yeah.
and he's playing his tail off, and I'm pulling for the kid. I always make sure I say that. I know he's a local kid. He seems like a great kid, but he continues to work at his craft to get better. If people say or he realizes he has shortcomings in his game, he works on them. He's worked on them yet again. His deep ball is fantastic. His passing has improved. So I'm giving him his flowers as the MVP as of right now in the NFL. I'm still waiting and seeing what he does in the playoffs, but I'm not going to take away from him and say that I should be throwing any stones at the Eagles right now with the best record in the NFL.
I could argue that every successful quarterback's a product of the system, because you're catering to what the strengths are of that quarterback. Like, any time that Tom Brady had success, like, why did they have offensive success? They were building around Tom Brady. Same thing with Peyton Manning. Like, Peyton Manning was doing things through the air before anybody was doing those things through the air, because they catered the offense around Peyton Manning. It's an outrageous take. Jalen Hurts has been playing very well. Is the offense built around his skill set? Yes, but that's a testament to the offensive coaching staff building the offense around his skill set.
I know that we mentioned this one, but this one really got under my craw once we played it and we talked about it a little bit. Skip Bayless has always bothered me. Skip Bayless's ability to take a discussionary sports talk show and make it personal with Shannon Sharp really got under my skin, because as much as I might get too sensitive or too passionate about a sports conversation, the one thing I'm never going to do with you or anybody else I either have worked with or would work with in any situation is make it personal. And I think that he crossed the line. I understand what he tries to do, as much as I hate it, on social media and with some of his takes. But when you bring personal make it personal as he did with Shannon, I think that was something that he should regret and apologize for, because I think he crossed the line way too far.
Yeah, I do too. I've probably done that a time or two, though. I don't know when I have, but I've probably done it. But if I have, I'm in the wrong. Jennifer Lawrence telling Variety, I remember when I was doing Hunger Games, nobody had ever put a woman in the lead of an action movie. Jennifer Lawrence says, to which this Twitter account, Stream the Vote, says that Uma Thurman, of course, in Kill Bill.
I was going to say
Halle Berry, who I think was Catwoman.
Angelina Jolie, too, right?
Angelina Jolie's on this list, too. What was the movie she was in? Tomb Raider. Yeah. She was in another, too, as the
Laura
lead.
Laura Croft Tomb Raider.
Yeah, there was another one, too, where I think she was somewhere around that time. So Jennifer Lawrence says that she's basically the first ever female action star when there is woman after woman.
Was Demi Moore on it for G.I. Jane?
She was not on this tweet, but she was, right? Yeah, was that right? An action movie? Yeah. I've never seen it, but I think that was an action movie. So Jennifer Lawrence apparently trailblazing in Hollywood. She's the first female lead of an action movie ever, according to Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, way to go, J-Law. Give yourself credit, more credit than you deserve.
Is this one a bad take? Lovie Smith, after the Cowboys game this past weekend, giving praise to the Dallas Cowboys. Lovie said the Cowboys have as good a chance as anyone to win it all. Said they showed the champion in them in that comeback victory over the Houston Texans on Sunday.
It's a horrible take. It's a horrible take, just like Mike McCarthy trying to oversell the same thing by saying, it doesn't matter what we did with our football team for 58 minutes. What matters is we won the football game. At the end of the day, that's what we had to do, is we won the football game. Stop it right now. That doesn't show me that you're a Super Bowl caliber.
At least McCarthy didn't say that, though.
He didn't say what Lovie said, but he basically tried to, you know, buff over the fact that your team played like absolute crap for 58 minutes. Lovie, I mean, I don't know if that's better for you because you say that there's a team that's a Super Bowl contender that you hung with, or the fact that it's horrible for them because you're giving them props after they completely crapped the bed against the worst team in the NFL.
I think that's exactly what he's doing, right? Yeah. Lovie Smith is trying to propel the other team, being like, look, that's a Super Bowl team. That's a team that has a chance to win it all. That's a team that's playing at home in Arlington, calls themselves Dallas for some reason. That's a team that could go all the way, and we're right there. We should have won. Brendan Riley thought that we won. I'm surprised he didn't say that in the press conference. No, we didn't win the game according to the NFL standards, but Brendan Riley tweeted that we won. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, broadcasting live from Madison's in Beaumont. Happy hour now. Come have a drink. Make it a Miller Lite. Have a bite. Hang out with us. Hang out with the Wheelhouse coming up after us as well. All right, the trade deadline somewhat coming up in the NBA. Today's a significant day because now you can trade players you signed in the offseason. And apparently the trade market heating up in the NBA, and the Rockets are at the forefront of those conversations. Who could be on the move? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Time to tell you right now about the people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, Doc O and his staff do a fantastic job of taking care of their patients because they care, and they want to know where you've been struggling. You're not trying to win a gold medal. You're just trying to win the day at this point in your life. You want to get all the honeydews crossed off and the to-do lists from work, and then you want to make sure you have time to work out and spend some time with your kids or your family. And you're running short on energy, and so you're falling short on getting those things done. That's where Apollo comes in. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you're having problems, they've got answers. They've got solutions. They'll get you where you need to go and feeling great again. It starts with getting more energy in your life on a daily basis. Could be as simple as a B12 shot like I get every week. Could be more complex as you get into all the different ways they have hormone therapy, and you can have it administered, or you can administer yourself and feel the energy on a daily basis. You want to work out and get into a workout program? Start with a full body composition analysis, or recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy. The way the whole process starts is make an appointment. Go to apollomh.com right now. See all the services they offer, and if there's a couple that you think you could benefit from, set up an appointment. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Free B12 shot on your first visit, or one of those body composition analyses that can tell you everything from your body fat to your muscle mass to all the critical numbers that you will want to keep an eye on as you progress with your workouts. There are good people doing great things on a daily basis. I encourage you to check them out. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Madison's in Beaumont. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Rockets are apparently going to make some moves. I mean, at least that's the rumor. They've been in trade talks. Today's a significant day in the NBA because you can now officially trade free agents that you signed in the offseason. So it usually starts to lead to some sort of trade talks, trade conversation around the leagues. And according to many people, I saw Jonathan Fagan talk about this in the Chronicle, Kelly Iko at the Athletic as well. I saw people at CBS Sports and USA Today start talking about the NBA trade deadline, which is still like 50-something days away. But they say that Eric Gordon is being shopped heavily by the Houston Rockets. And another name that's interestingly to me, I think at least to me it's interesting, Kenyon Martin Jr. is another name that's receiving a heavy, heavy chatter around the NBA.
Well, we heard before the season Kenyon Martin Sr. saying that this wasn't the best place for his son. He appreciates the fact that they drafted him and gave him an opportunity, but he would be better suited elsewhere. I thought that was the beginning of the end of Kenyon Martin Jr.'s career with the Rockets. And then I also didn't think with the rotation and taking Jabari Smith that there was going to be enough room for him to play, but and especially Tari Eason. But he's played well, and I think he's an energizer guy. And I don't want to give up on him if whether other teams are interested or not, because I believe he can still be a piece for you. He's still developing. You don't know how good he can be. And he's got a boatload of talent that he's improved on. Yeah. He's become an undersized power forward with leaping ability. He's become more of a shot blocker, a defensive guy, a guy that finishes on the break, we know. And he can shoot the three a little bit. He's got a little bit more to his offensive game. On the Eric Gordon front, I think it's a deal that should have already been done. I look at his body language and say that he should be gone as soon as possible. I worry that you won't get as much as you would have gotten last year at the deadline when Phoenix needed a third scoring option and was willing to give you their first-round pick, and you were concerned that that wasn't high enough. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know if you're going to get more than a second-round pick for Eric Gordon, but at this point, get whatever you can and move on. The interesting name for me as it relates to what you said in terms of guys that are now tradable, I think Jayshon Tate, though he hasn't played, has a ton of value for a lot of really good teams. And I think that's a guy that teams might be considered might consider to look at as a glue guy, an energizer guy, a younger kind of a Draymond Greenish type of guy you can have for several years that could do some things for you that they might want to think about moving, because he's older, as you had mentioned, from the rest of your nucleus, and he might be better suited somewhere else. He got his money. Now get a chance to play and fit in better than he does with a young team.
Of the three wings that the Rockets have, that I don't really consider Eric Gordon a wing, but like pieces that could be foundational between Kenyon Martin Jr., between Tate, and between Tari Eason, I would like the Rockets to prioritize Eason above all three of them.
Yep.
And then second it would be Kenyon Martin Jr. I think Martin's closer to Eason in terms of what I want the Rockets to prioritize than he is to Tate.
Like, I think Eason's a much better offensive player. I think that defensively Martin can get better, but he brings that leaping ability and length that Tari Eason has some of the length. He doesn't have the athleticism of Martin.
Right. To me, Tate is not a piece for this team. And I understand like he was the emotional leader last year, and people look at him as the leader this year. He's the leader on a team that's not winning a whole lot of games, and I don't really see him as part of this foundation going forward, even though they gave him the contract. The hesitation that I would have trading Tate, though, is like you said, he hasn't played much he's played a few games, handful of games, is that I don't think you could get top value in return for Tate because of where he's at, and I'm not a big believer in selling low and buying
high. You don't
want
to give him away, but you didn't pay anything to get him. Rafael Stone, to his credit, found him,
uh-huh,
brought him in, developed him, and he became a diamond in the rough. But you also didn't have to extend him, and you did. And
sure.
So to get that off your books might help.
But
as
if
well.
But if you played him the rest, like let's say he gets healthy, and then you play him the rest of the way, don't you think you could get more in return in the offseason than you would right now?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
See, that's where I'm at. Like looking at it from a
to your point, you might
play him
between now and the trade deadline, and he starts playing like he was playing, and the value goes up because right now he's damaged goods.
People I don't know where his health is at.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know how likely it is that he returns before that deadline. But yeah, if he can do that, you can showcase him, and then all of a sudden you can get close to what you think is top return. I'm totally good with that.
And speaking of showcasing, by the way, don't think for a second that there wasn't a method to the madness of Eric Gordon playing minutes against the Warriors, minutes the other night against the Suns.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure he'll play a lot of minutes tonight against the Heat, because those are three teams that had been targeted are connected to Eric Gordon in the past that could still use Eric Gordon.
I think we're all in favor of trading Gordon for whatever you can trade Gordon for, really because you want the minutes. It's nothing against Gordon. You just want those minutes to the young guys.
It's not against him, Jeremy, but you've seen it as well as I have. His body language has changed.
He wants to be on a contender.
He used to be where he was just – he was fine and content whether he was traded or not. Uh-huh. This year looks like – he wants out, and when he doesn't get touches and doesn't get shots and doesn't see the ball when he thinks he should, he's showing it more. And that's when there's a clear sign the guy's got to go.
Yeah, I think he will end up being traded. You want to get the minutes more than anything else. You know, if you can get a first rounder, that'd be great. I don't think that that's going to happen. As far as the Kenyon Martin Jr. conversation, I don't understand why he thinks the situation's poor for him.
I think it was more of his dad.
But even then, like, I don't understand with his dad. I don't agree with his dad then, because whoever trades for him, and other than being a winning team, like if he's going, like if he's seeking wanting to play for a contender, that sort of thing, I think the Rockets are showcasing him and using him like pretty much the best way that you can use a Kenyon Martin Jr. I don't really think he's a starter on an upper echelon playoff team. I think he's a second or third guy off the bench that brings that athleticism, can play 20 to 25 minutes, knock down a three, play good defense, slash to the basket with athleticism. I really don't see him going somewhere else and being showcased better.
I think Oklahoma City, I think his dad saw this juggernaut of young talent and young, highly drafted talent, and didn't see a place for his son to get playing time. And again, Tate factors into that because Tate got a lot of his minutes because he was not only, like you said, a leader, but he was that guy that was the glue guy that was getting the rebounds and diving on the floor and doing the things to kind of keep the whole unit together, to where I think Kenyon Martin Sr. looked at the roster and the age of the roster and said, they don't have a plan for my son. I'd like him to go to a team that if you're terrible, you're still going to throw him out there for 30 minutes a night and let him show what he can do. And I think that's what he was thinking, not thinking that there might still be an opportunity for this team all along to be a connection for him. I wouldn't want to be shipping him right now at this point. He's low cost, he's high ceiling, and he's energy when he's on the floor. He's not a negative, he's a positive. I wouldn't be looking to move him no matter, and I would think that Kenyon Martin Sr. probably changed his tune as well.
Yeah, I would think, but he's still being rumored to be somebody that still wants out, which is surprising to me.
I had heard that teams were interested in him, but if he truly still wants out, then that's on him, and then I think you'd be careful what you ask for.
It is interesting when you look at this team, because I think Gordon's at the top of that list. According to Fagan, half a dozen contenders are interested. Now, interest is always, okay, well, at what cost? We didn't see that the Rockets were able to trade him a year ago. Rockets do play the Heat tonight. If the Rockets win against the Miami Heat, is there cause for some concern?
Yeah.
That's kind of a funny way to phrase that.
But it's true, because as much as people are going to capitalize on six straight home wins and beating contending teams and playoff caliber teams and all the positives that go with that, we keep reminding you this is the last year they have total control of their own pick, and this pick could be really, really transcending in terms of that number one or that number two pick. We both think Scoot's an unbelievable fit for this team if he goes at number two. But if you're lucky enough to get number one and you get Victor Wembanyama, and you know that he could be the next Giannis, he could be the next so many different guys he's compared to, but he could be massive in terms of on the floor and off of it for this franchise, you got to be careful, because it's a delicate, slippery slope when you're winning games. But are you winning too soon, and it takes you out of one last chance to get one more franchise-type player that you can play with and develop and find out what you truly have?
Yeah, it's tough, though, right? Because the way that you're winning is how you want to win, because you're winning with the younger guys. You're winning with Jalen Green playing well. Kevin Porter Jr., when you're winning, he's usually playing well. Same thing with Şengün. Tari, you know, coming off the bench, providing, you know, 20 minutes of quality play. So it's like it's not a conversation you can have. It's not a conversation of, like, take your foot off the gas. It's more of, like, a fan perspective of, like, what's in the best interest of the Houston Rockets? What is the best interest for their long-term, you know, success that they could have in an organization? Because I think that the difference, and we talked about this yesterday, I think the difference of them having a potential championship nucleus versus what I currently think is a potential playoff nucleus, I think would require one of the top two picks in this year's NBA draft.
Yep.
But you're not going to tell the team stop playing well. Silas is coaching for a job. The players are playing for contracts. They're playing for progression, all of those things. So it's kind of, you're, from a fan perspective, you're rooting for this happy balance of, you know, stay in the top five-ish. Don't go too far with the winning. That's kind of what you're rooting for. At the same time, you want to see the players develop. And at the end of the day, it's unlike the NFL. Like, you still have the lottery. It's still chance. It's still about, you know, how the ping pong balls fall. and then you just pray that you get lucky at the end of the day.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that, you know, it's boom or bust in the fact that you'd still rather be in the bottom three so that you're at least guaranteed the best percentage chance to have the ping pong balls fall your way, because they also know what it's like to have the ping pong balls but not have them fall your way when they ended up with the third best pick last year and got Jabari Smith. But ideally, you would have liked to have one of the other guys, maybe. Maybe Banchero was all along a better fit, and you didn't really want to get stuck with Chet, or you didn't know. But you really basically took the decision-making process out of it,
yeah,
and were just left with whichever player was left over. You'd rather be like the Texans, front of the draft, 1-1, take the best player, whoever you think is the best fit, go get them, and be in a huge advantage to everybody else.
Last year, it was the conversation about wanting to be in the top three. This year, the conversation's about needing to be in the top two. You either have a top two pick or you don't. That's how I look at this year's NBA draft. It's Killer Bees broadcasting live. Madison's in Beaumont. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We're still going to give away $50 to Drift Bar coming up a little bit later in the show. Make sure you're tuning in. Not going to tell you exactly when we're doing it. If you were randomly dropped into a pro sporting event with your entire country's hopes and dreams on the line, would you most want to attempt a free throw, a penalty kick, a 25-yard field goal, or a 6-foot putt? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, one more time I'm going to remind you, because time is running out. You're getting close to the holidays. You're getting close to Christmas. You need to get a gift for that significant other, and you really want to make sure she's happy. Well, nothing's going to make her happier and you happy, too, than a gift from Pajamagram, because Pajamagram is the gift that keeps on giving, if you know what I mean. Because you get it for her, and then she puts it on, and then she really looks great in it, and you know that that's a gift that you can capitalize on, too. It's fantastic. It's alluring. It's beautiful nude pajamas that feel just like her soft skin. The texture and touch is so seductive, you're both going to love the feel. And they leave nothing to the imagination, if you know what I mean. Naturally nude pajamas are fantastic. She's going to wear them well, and you're going to love the fact that she's wearing them for you. Order today, and Pajamagram is going to include a free matching natural nude nightgown. That's a $75 value. So it's two gifts for the price of one, and both keep giving back to you all year long. Pajamagram does the wrapping for you as well. Free gift packaging. No need to go to the mall, fight for parking spots, battle the crowds, have to sit at long lines at the register. Nope, do it all right here at Pajamagram.com. They'll do the rest for you. Get it there before the holidays. Get it there with gift wrapping, and get it there with gifts she's going to love, and you will too. All you do is go to Pajamagram.com. That's Pajamagram.com. Naturally nude pajamas. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Madison's in Beaumont. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I saw this on Vice Golf Instagram. I don't know if you follow them on Instagram or not, but pretty good account, especially if you like golf. But during the World Cup, they posted this question. If you were randomly dropped into a pro sporting event, your entire country's hopes and dreams on the line, would you most want to attempt one of these four things? A free throw, a penalty kick, a 25-yard field goal, or a 6-foot putt?
I'm taking the free throw.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I just have my abilities, I'm taking the free throw.
Why would you have anybody else's abilities?
Well, but I'm saying, I mean, sometimes if you have Shaq's abilities at the free throw line, it's different because his chances to make the free throw are slim and none. I just think that it's something that with muscle memory and everything else, it's something that you do all the time. And I've been in situations with a lot of nerves when you're at the line. But as long as you go through the same routine every time, I think the chances to keep it online and have a real good chance to go in, I'll take that as opposed to reading a green and knowing that it breaks, you know, it could break a million different ways. And, you know, soccer and which way the goalies go and tendencies and all that stuff. It's just you, the ball, and the rim. And I believe that's what would be my best chance to succeed.
Well, if it's college basketball, you have the players, you know, holding their hands up, and you have the band behind you waving their hands, things like that. B. Hannon says easy, PK, especially depending on who you play for. You can never have to pay for anything for the rest of your life. See,
if you miss, you could be dead.
Depending on who you play for.
Just, yeah, exactly right. I mean, that's as simple as it gets.
Depending on who you play for. So, like, I like to look at these things analytically and really think about these things. I never played a foot sport. I never played soccer. I only broadcasted soccer. I never. I played it like recess, but I never played organized soccer. I only broadcasted it for 3 years. So the foot sports are out. Like football, like making a penalty kick for me, I'm not sure that I can make a penalty kick 3 times out of 10. A 25-yard field goal, like even against air, I'm not sure I can make that half the time.
Technically a foot, not a sport, but
right,
a,
yeah.
Yeah, a foot.
It's with the foot.
Now, when in college. And we had a really good football program that made the Amos Alonzo Stag Bowl and everything like that. And one of the classes taught was, in part, difficult sports, and one of them was field goal kicking.
Yeah.
Even still, I mean, there is a true method to getting it airborne and hitting
sure.
it right. I wouldn't like my chances with it.
No, I mean, we're talking about our skill level right now, you as a person. So to me, it comes down to two things.
And you love having a putter in your hand. You're always,
I do.
When we do the golf
do.
Tournament broadcast, you're always practicing with your putter.
I do. Yeah, the thick grip. Yeah. For me, it's either a free throw or a 6-foot putt. It's one of those two things. It's either a free throw or a 6-foot putt. So I start thinking about it from like, okay, if I had 10 chances to knock in a free throw, I had 10 chances to knock in a 6-foot putt, which of the two do I think I would have more success with? I don't think I'm 50-50 from 6 foot. From
even
all
if
the putting
it's a straight as narrow putt?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think I make 50% of maybe 50%, but from the free throw line, like I'm not a great shooter. I was more of a streaky shooter, but I'm thinking I'm making 60-65% minimum from the free throw line.
I think you could.
I know I can.
Well, this is a conversation I used to have with Nick Sciarra when we were doing shows together, when he was convinced he was an 80%+ free throw
That's
shooter.
A bit high.
And I would question that. But, yeah, if you just think, you know, you got to make at least 50% of them, 60-65, I'd bet on you to make those.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to make a 65% clip on a 6-foot putt, though. But I feel confident I'll make 65% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
What is it for you? 713-780-ESPN. Your country's hopes and dreams are on the line. What are you most confident in? You make a free throw, a PK, a 25-yard field goal, or a 6-foot putt? I think it's easy free throw. Brendan was saying earlier he had a buddy that said that this answer for him was a penalty kick. Did this guy play a lot of football in his day, Brendan?
So not
I can
only
see Glenn Davis saying that.
Not
yeah,
only
Glenn,
did he
for
say,
Glenn, I would say that.
Not only did he say a penalty kick. No, Jeremy, he had played no sports above, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, recreational as a kid. He said he could hit penalty kicks at a 60% clip in the World Cup.
Oh, stop it. Just stop it right there. Especially when it's a life or death situation, it's a lot more difficult than saying with your buddies in the yard or
know,
out on
like,
the field.
You say life or death a little bit too casually for my liking.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it's I'm saying that would actually weigh on me enough that that's why I wouldn't want to do it. Because like you said, depending on the country you play for, the situation you're in, if it's that serious and it could be that devastating for you in the end run, I'm not doing that.
1209 says if there's no goalie, I'll do the PK. Probably do it anyway. That's moving the goalpost, no pun intended, more than I've ever seen in my life. Why would there not be a goalie?
Right.
Like, what are you doing? You're reinventing the game. Yeah, it's a straw man.
You think a straight 6-foot putt is easy. I mean, kicking it into the soccer goal when you can just kick it like a slow roller and just make sure it stays online. Now, instead of trying to put it in a little golf hole, you're putting it in a goalie?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the size of a goal? Get out of here.
I want to ask you guys about the penalty kick because this is like, I like really got into this debate with my friend because I'm not a soccer guy. He was saying, like, the goalie's going to guess one way. Like, if I just kick the other way, I'm good.
Okay.
If I step into a professional arena, right, like, if I'm going against a professional goalkeeper, I don't think he's going to respect me. I don't think he's going to guess which way I'm going. I think
he's
going to wait.
If you don't have any heat on it, he might wait.
Now, if you start, like, running up real quickly to it, and I saw Brian King do this, and you stop real quick.
A little deke.
Maybe you can get an indication of which way he's leaning and then go the other route.
Here's the thing, though. Like, if you just, like, play the math there, where your friend was talking about this, Brendan, where he said, like, look, he's going to guess one way. I could be going the other way. That's 50-50.
Well, I think he was leaving the middle as a possible option was his thought. That's how he got to 60.
Okay, but even if it's 60, that's also guaranteeing that you're putting it on target every single time.
Yeah, that was
like,
part of
I'm not even sure that I can put it on target every single time. Like, again, I'm not great with my feet, I don't believe.
With somebody in the net, no shot. To me, this is a no-brainer free throw, but I think the chances are I'd probably die.
Probably die? Somebody's going to kill you?
Yes.
Oh, so I think I'm about
going life or death, right?
Yeah, 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 Blankers did. So I'm about 65% sure.
there's proof that could be a consequence.
What are your percentages here? Because I believe I'm about a 65% free throw shooter. Penalty kick, I think I'm probably going to make a penalty kick 40% of the time. That might even be high. A 25-yard field
goal. The
goalie
factor is big.
25-yard field goal, like that might even be like 10% of the time. I'm not going to lie. I'm not very good kicking.
I'm thinking 30% on field goals.
And then a six-foot putt for me, I'm probably 50-50 from 6 feet, I think.
I think from 6 foot, I would be pleased with 50, 60%. But, yeah, I mean, again, and then it's not guaranteed to be straight, and there might be, you know, grain issues or, you know, a spike mark or something. You know, free throws, I've lived it. I've been through it on every level, all through, including in an NBA venue. I did it when I was even a kid, and I won multiple contests doing it. I did it in high school. I made two with the game on the line with the whole gym waiting on it.
What game? What was this? Two on the line.
It was a high school game. We were in overtime.
Yeah.
And actually, I had been subbed out four, and our point guard got hurt, and I was called off the bench to make two free throws, down one to decide the game. And it happened to be right before my dad had heart surgery, and he was in the hospital and couldn't be there, and it meant the world to me. I made both of them and then went to tell him about it in the hospital afterwards. And then, you know, in all the different leagues I've been in and everything like that, I've been more conditioned to do that. I think the Bucks games when I was a kid was the biggest with the contest because it's a full house and they're watching these two kids, so they're actually more invested in it than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years in a row, I not only made it through the qualifying round, I made it to the championship with a big prize on the line and was able to do it. So that's where I would feel most confident. There's not a goalie trying to block it when it gets near the rim.
Yeah.
It's just you, the ball, and the rim.
I made four free throws in the last minute of a championship game in the ABA, Atascocita Basketball Association, to tie the game with the first two and then to win the game with the next two.
There you go.
But what would you say your free throw percentage was lifetime?
In high school, it was like 90-something
percent.
Yeah,
you're a good shooter. Now, you don't have any quickness. You're not much of an athlete, but I know you're a good shooter.
Okay. I think lifetime I'm over 80% from the free throw line.
Yeah, I know that you're a good shooter. You just can't guard your
That's
shadow.
That's not true.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Justin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Justin?
What's going on, guys? Your buddy who said PK is in the World Cup, man, he must believe in population control, but for the behalf of society, put a putter in my hand.
Okay. Putter in the hand. We got Tiger Woods on the line. Thank you, Justin Woods. There's no way you're going PKs here unless you've played soccer. Unless you're
right,
Glenn Davis.
Right.
Unless
at a pretty high level,
like
too.
At least high school level, and you're not good at the other sports.
I think maybe even higher than that. But, yeah, especially high school level at the minimum. But people forget that Glenn Davis not only knows soccer, he played for the old Houston Hotshots. He played professional soccer. So, you know, there's a method to the madness, too.
I wonder how many, like, footballers – would go 25-yard field goal.
I was going to say, I don't think that's really on the board either. I don't.
Like, but if you're a soccer player,
and you don't have a goalie trying to knock it down, all you got to do is just kick it straight through, you're right.
I think, like a Glenn Davis of the world, I wonder if he thinks it'd be easier to make a 25-yard field goal than he would a penalty kick.
Because there's no one defending it.
See, there is.
That's
there
the part
is.
That I think you guys aren't thinking
higher.
About.
Yeah. It's not that difficult.
But essentially, the goal is as wide, because in high school, the goal was as wide as the goalposts.
Mm-hmm.
So, as long as you think about it, you take the defense factor out of it. I don't have a goalie trying to knock it down either. If I just get it airborne and kick it straight like I would a penalty shot without a goalie, it might be easier.
I think you guys are underrating the difficulty of getting it over a defensive line for somebody who
If you don't do it, you're not a soccer player or a kicker. There's no way you're picking the foot. You're not picking the PK. You're not picking the field goal. What I'm saying, if you are somebody that trusts your foot more than a free throw or the putt, I think that you might go 25-yard field goal or PK.
I'll tell you what the technicality is, Jeremy. The technicality is, are you kicking it off a tee or you need a holder and the ball on the ground?
Because I would say 25-yard field goal. You're lining it up NFL game, like Super Bowl. Like this.
Someone's
got to
put it down on the turf and hold it with one finger.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're assuming the operation sound.
Yeah, right.
We're assuming he's not going to botch the snap.
Technically, everything gets to ball on ground being held properly. You got to kick it.
713-780-ESPN. Country's hopes and dreams on the line. You're taking free throw, PK, 25-yard field goal, or a 6-foot putt. Is there any concern after last week with the Texans, after they gave the Cowboys a sweat? They gave them a good sweat. Is there any concern that the Texans may win another game down the stretch because of this new cutting-edge offense the Houston Texans are deploying? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live from Madison's in Beaumont for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Join us as we celebrate Christmas a little early with ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Season of Giving. Today we're giving away $50 gift cards to Drift Bar, where you can watch all the bowl games this bowl season. Come check out their massive outdoor patio, two biggest screens in the Heights. Caller number 11, 713-780-3776, wins a $50 gift card to Drift Bar. Tune in all December long for our Season of Giving. Don't forget to join us Friday, December 23rd, for our annual Christmas party. Don't let the cold keep you away from the party. We'll be broadcasting indoors from Nick's Place all day. So Nick's Place from the bench all the way through the wheelhouse. Of course, we're broadcasting today from Madison's in Beaumont. Still got plenty of time to come hang out with the wheelhouse. They'll be here until 7 o'clock. Drink specials. When you get a drink, get a Miller Lite. Good food. A great spot to hang out if you're in the Beaumont area. Also, tomorrow we will be at Drift Bar in the Heights. Well, I guess I shouldn't say we.
I meant
we as a show. We as the Killer Bees. We as a product will be at the Drift Bar tomorrow in the Heights. Swing on by. Say hello to Blank. And then Cole Thompson will be filling in for me. See if Cole can annoy Blankers as much as I can. Maybe
no
I might send him
that.
A text to see if I put him up to the task.
I don't need you to do that.
Why not? Why do I annoy you so much? I don't annoy you.
I mean,
you're just saying that. It's a bit. It's a bit.
If you asked that question more frequently, I think that we'd have better chemistry, and we might even hang out.
Why? I don't want to hang out with you.
Oh, see, there you go. There it is in a nutshell. We summed it all up. We're good. Oh, yeah, I don't.
We don't have common interest.
Yeah, you're right. Zero.
I'm sorry that I have too much time in my day.
You don't. Yeah.
There's not enough time in the day. I'm sorry that I'm too busy for you, Blankers.
That's not where it starts and ends, but it's fun. At all.
So where does it start and end?
Hey, I know before you get out of here for the week, one thing we need to talk about is that game Saturday is massive. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fantastic game no matter what, but when you talk about a Virginia team that under the direction of Mr. Bennett has got a lot of formidable players on it, but it's a chance for redemption for U of H after dropping a game I really thought they hadn't they were in control of and had in hand against Alabama, but they can bounce back, get themselves a top five win, and get the progression back to getting that number one spot back again.
I'm really looking forward to it. That's why I'm going to miss tomorrow's show, flying to Charlottesville, Virginia. I've never been there before. I hear it's beautiful this time of year.
Yeah, my buddy that I used to work with the Rockets that still works there now, Z French, he worked for us, then he went there and he worked in the athletic department and came back. But he went there and he between things he said and pictures we've seen,
yeah.
It looks like a beautiful campus.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. Number five in the country at number two in the country, a top five matchup in Virginia on Saturday.
Hostile
environment. Tony Bennett. I mean, these are two programs here that are – let's just say the last five seasons in college basketball, the pinnacle of defensive basketball teams in college basketball. Tony Bennett, the pack line defense, Kelvin Sampson, brilliant defensive mind as well. So these are the two forefront college basketball programs when it comes to defense. It should be a battle.
Tony with Wisconsin ties too, so it's tough for me, but I'm pulling.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah. Dick Bennett, was longtime
legendary coach, right?
Legendary coach in the state of Wisconsin, ended up late in his career getting the Badger job. They loved him, he loved them, then decided to step away, ended up trying one more time at Washington State, and then calling it a career. But Tony grew up as a point guard. He was a point guard at University of Wisconsin Green Bay, played for the Charlotte Hornets, played a little bit in the NBA, and then got it back into coaching to follow his dad's footsteps, and he's done great. So I'm proud of everything he's accomplished as a Wisconsinite.
I'm a fan of their program. I'm a fan of Tony Bennett, too. I'm not a fan Saturday.
The other thing is he produces really good players, and he doesn't have to go get nothing but five stars like Cal does and some of the big programs. And I think Kelvin does a lot of that, too, so I'm with you on that.
Is there any concern after last week that the Texans challenged the Chiefs coming up on Sunday?
I know. As much as the Cowboys were 17.5-point favorites and no one gave them a chance, and yet we had a game, I don't see that same kind of thing happening with a team as good as the Chiefs are, led by Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and a lot of the guys that have come up in our conversation over the last almost 3 hours. I just think that this one gets real ugly real quick unless they just start padding the brakes and sitting guys down.
Brandon Cooks might be back, though.
Oh, boy.
That's a huge lift for the Houston Texans. I'm right there with you. No, it doesn't change anything for Sunday. Now, the better question is this. Did last week, you know, quarterback tandem, the Driscoll Cat, whatever we're calling it, did last week give you any more concern that they will win a game or two down the stretch now that they have this new, cunning, calculative, innovative offense?
No, not at all. Matter of fact, it gave me more encouragement that they won't, and they won't even sniff it, because now that other teams that are still on the schedule know that they're capable of doing it and will possibly or probably do it, They will game plan for it more. They will practice around it during the course of the week. And the Texans will have less success trying to execute it, especially if they do it as frequently as a 50-50 split like they did a week ago. I think that given any defensive coordinator watching tape, now knowing that they're going to consider doing that, they're not gonna, it's not going to catch them flat-footed and surprise them. They'll be prepared for it. They'll know how to defense it. And they know that Driscoll can't pass in it. So good luck.
He did throw a touchdown. Their touchdown pass. Okay. I'm with you though. No, it doesn't change anything for me either. I think we're overrating like its effectiveness. I think it caught the Cowboys off guard a little bit, caught them off their heels a little bit.
They were going to consider.
They were a bit stunned. And they didn't prepare for that. They didn't prepare for a wildcat Driscoll throw the football a couple times, but throw it more times than not. And if you go and look at that game, Texans scored 20 points in the first half. Cowboys make some adjustments. They get into the locker room. How many points did Texans score in the second? Three. They scored 3 points in the second half. That's the way it's going to be the rest of the season against every team in the NFL because they prep it. And if you have time to prep that, it's not a difficult thing to stop in the NFL.
Right.
It's pretty simple for NFL defenses to stop that. And also, like, the total yards in that game, 181 of those yards of what they had in the game, 327, came in the first half. So, like, all of their success came when it surprised the Cowboys. Now that every other team in the NFL that they're going to play knows that the Texans are capable of this, they're going to have something in place to stop this, to slow it down. I don't really think it's going to be effective the rest of the year.
No, I think you're right, and I think you make another valid point, and that is you look at what Navy does on the college level. When you haven't prepared for Navy and seen it all year long, they have the ability to catch you snapping, and they can take advantage of that. In the NFL, it's a different ball game, and they're gonna have seen it. They're gonna know how they use it, and they're gonna shut it down real quick, and they're not gonna be worried about it. And they also know who's executing it. So I think it's different on the college level than it is in the pro game, and I think that you'll see that difference if they try and do it as frequently as they did a week ago.
Yeah, I don't see this being something that's sustainable. I think people are overrating. It really wasn't that effective. Like the Texans were slightly more than their yards per game when you look at their entire
season
numbers. The
element of surprise played as big a factor as anything they did.
And so did the Cowboys.
True.
The Cowboys gifted the Texans
possessions
in the Cowboys side of the field? The interceptions, the muff punt. It really wasn't this like offensive wizardry by Pep Hamilton.
It was the perfect storm.
It wasn't this scheme that was outstanding. It stunned them and it caught them off guard.
Yeah, it was the perfect storm. It was the combo platter factored in as well as the element of surprise. And they basically kind of freaked out for a little bit, including their quarterback. And when they righted the ship, they had just enough time, 2 minutes on the clock and 98 yards to go, to set the record straight, and they did.
Yeah, I don't even think it was a one-off. Like, I wouldn't even call it a one-off for what the Texans did. I would call it quarters off.
Yeah, I think the surprise element, the Texans, cute little, gimmicky thing that worked in terms of catching them a little bit surprised. But I think it was more that it was the missteps of the Cowboys than it was anything other than that the Texans did.
I've seen a lot of people picking up Jeff Driscoll to play a tight end on their fantasy football teams. I'm not expecting Jeff Driscoll to have any sort of success. How come you're hating on Brandon Cooks? Why don't you think the addition of Brandon Cooks is going to mean much to the Texans the rest of the way?
Brandon Cooks is a quote-unquote culture guy and a leader guy and a locker room guy and a Casario guy or whoever he was guy, Patriots guy. It all went out the window when you saw his body language and the level of quit and the I want outs and the pouty baby not doing the press conference you normally do and all the different things that went into this guy that was supposed to be this outstanding citizen in the locker room. I'm done with him. I hope they move on from him as quick as possible in the offseason. And him coming back versus him playing means nothing to me because you don't know when he plays at what level of effort he's going to give you. And if he's going to be able to catch the ball on the goal line if it's thrown to him or do anything other than shake his head and get mad at the sidelines if he's not getting the ball enough.
Do you think he was wrong with anything that he said?
Some of them, yeah.
I'm with you about with Cooks. Like, I want to move Cooks in the offseason. He shouldn't be on this team going forward. I want a new receiver one. I would love the idea of Quentin Johnston in a Houston Texans uniform, the TCU kid. Especially if you're going quarterback at one, which we know that I'm not a huge fan of that. But still, like, I like the idea of adding Quentin Johnston to this team. Mm-hmm. And I think you have a pretty solid – like, you have potential to have a solid wide receiver core. I'm not going to say that you will have a solid wide receiver core.
You hope Mechie comes back.
Right. There's some unknowns.
I think that if Nico Collins is your third best wide receiver, you're in a good position. There's a lot of potential if that's the case. Plus, if you do go franchise quarterback, you give him every chance to succeed with wide receivers that he can throw to.
Even if you don't, you have an in place for the next guy that you try to get.
And you have a buy-in that these guys want to be there, too. It's not like Cooks, who wants to be on a winning team or wants to be in a veteran locker room. These are young guys that want to be a part of this process because it's part of their maturation and their development as well as the team's.
Yeah, the younger players don't really have a chance to kind of be noisy, right?
Right.
Like, whereas Brandon Cooks is trying to – he wanted out because he wanted to be on a contender.
Absolutely.
Didn't want to be with the Tech. He might have had a bit of a relationship with Easterby, too. Like, his relationship with Easterby probably played a factor in all that.
Easterby was his biggest supporter, and that was a main reason why it worked for both sides. And that there's a main reason why now it shouldn't work going forward.
Easterby never went on McAfee, by the Pat McAfee show.
No, he did that lame podcast.
I listened to it, and I regret listening to it. Like, he said absolutely
nothing.
You can't
get back in your life.
He said a bunch of big buzzwords about leadership and, like, stuff. it was a waste of time.
Coach
there was
speak
nothing
101.
There was nothing worth talking about.
Yeah, when you're not, it was like podcast. Coach Pete at a press conference. I'm not giving you anything, but I'm going to sound like I gave you the world.
All right, it's going to do it for us. Come hang out with the Wheelhouse, Madison's in Beaumont. Spot to be, happy hour going on now. Get a Miller Lite, get a bite. We'll be fantastic. Tomorrow, Cole Thompson in for me. He'll be along with Joel Blank. Broadcasting live from Drift Bar in the Heights. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. Some of the hard work. BMAC really did all the hard work. For Blank, I'm Branham. Blank and Cole Thompson will talk to you tomorrow from Drift Bar. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.